you know, as time has gone by, cattle have changed a lot. The question then becomes, has their nutrition requirements or their needs changed along with their genetic potential for outputs?
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/AG. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I am Carlos Campabadal, a feed manufacturing and grain storage specialist here at the IGP Institute of Kansas State University, dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussions in this feed science podcast and feed science, of course, industry. Today, we have a great guest, so please get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. So welcome, David, Dr. Lahman. Thank you very much for joining us in this podcast. For me, of course, it is a great pleasure to see fellow colleagues from land-grant universities and hear from the Great Plains having you. So first of all, again, thank you for joining us. If you could just kind of please just introduce yourself so our audience from all over the world can learn a little bit about you.
Of course. And thank you for the invitation to join you today. I'm excited to be here. My name is David Lahman. I am an extension beef cattle specialist and professor at Oklahoma State University. I carry a split extension in research and split appointment in research and extension work here at the university. My primary focus is cow-calf nutrition and the genetic by nutrition interaction. Carlos, my background is essentially a farming operation in Southeast Kansas as a youth, and then went to Kansas State University for a number of years before I moved on to Montana State University, where I worked as a herdsman up there and worked on a master's degree. When I finished there in nutrition, livestock nutrition there at Montana State, from there I moved on to the University of Missouri at Columbia, Missouri, and over a period, or a longer period, because I was working at extension there in Missouri, kind of extended my PhD program. But I finished up there and moved to Oklahoma State.
Wow. So you have, as I see, very good experience in the beef cattle and the academic side from, of course, Kansas State University. And we love to hear about our alumni. And then Montana State going to see up in the Pacific Northwest, kind of, you know, northern part of the country. Yes. And then, of course, here in the center in Missouri, and then Oklahoma State. So, wow, that's very impressive. And you can see different scenarios of that. So
absolutely.
So with that is, I think for me and of course the audience, we're going to be very curious to learn a lot about what you do and all the technical aspects of your work, when you see going on in the industry and overall in the country, in the world. So to start, you know, can you tell us a little bit about your area of specialization? What have you gone through within the last years that you have been a professor and extension specialist there in Oklahoma State? And of course, you can link back to your previous work there in Missouri and Montana State, but a little bit about your area and cow nutrition and beef production systems overall from that ruminant side.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so, you know, as an extension person, having an extension responsibility, you know, that has sort of held my research program to the more practical side of things. You know, I have done a lot of applied nutrition work throughout my career, including my extension time at the University of Missouri. Missouri has a lot of cows, and so my colleagues and I at the University of Missouri helped people better understand, you know, how to develop, whether it be forage management, grazing systems, and supplementation, mineral supplements, protein, energy to match their forage resources there in Missouri. That kind of work continued here in Oklahoma, And I work throughout the industry here in the state and other states to help people understand, you know, how to best match nutrition of a cow to their grazing management system. During my career, you know, I've sort of developed a stronger interest in genetics over time.
Okay.
And as, you know, as time has gone by, cattle have changed a lot.
Okay. Interesting.
The question then becomes, has their nutrition requirements or their needs changed along with their genetic potential for outputs? Outputs as in whether it be milk yield in a beef cow, whether it be growth potential in a beef cow, maybe their appetite, their ability and desire to consume feed. Has that changed compared to animals from 30, 40, and 50 years ago? And so that's been a big part of our both extension and research program here over the last 10 to 15 years.
Wow. So that's very interesting. And you know, I actually come from, like I told you a little bit earlier, we connected that from a beef cattle production farm in actually Costa Rica. And our genetics has changed too, of course, as weather and dry and rain weather throughout the year. But forage for us is always very important, and that's play a key role for growth on the beef cattle and, of course, the dairy too. Being said that, just overall, based on your experience, can you just tell us a little bit how that, I'm assuming that's part of that change of genetics, but how your interest in forage utilization, efficiency has changed. Can you go a little bit more in detail on all that? I mean, what have you seen? What do you see in the future? All those things related.
Sure can. The one really interesting thing about a cow, well, first of all, I guess to put it in perspective, let's look at the big picture and maybe the best way to describe that would be that the cow-calf segment of the beef cattle industry uses about 74% of the feed energy required to produce 1 pound of carcass weight.
Okay.
Okay, so of the feed energy that goes into producing beef, the cow-calf segment uses 3/4 of it. And so it's a very important part of our production system and our sustainability over time. And the ironic thing is, and you know, and there's a reason that, you know, the literature information, research information on that three quarters of the energy used is still fairly sparse. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that is because it's very difficult to measure feed intake in a cow that's out there grazing.
Exactly.
That's true for, since we've been doing research, it's still true today, unfortunately. Now, you know, so we have been measuring cow intake on forage and then trying to apply that to that genetic by environment interaction. But you can imagine, you know, most of the research being conducted and over about the last 25 years has been conducted with growing cattle in these, what we'll call them, newer feed intake systems. Feed intake systems like GrowSafe, a company that I guess is Vitelli now, their name is Vitelli. Incentech is another company that provides that type of equipment to measure individual animal intake. And Sealock is a new company that's relatively new that's also provides that equipment. But the industry has been utilizing that individual animal intake equipment now for a good number of years to explore improvements in feed efficiency. But the style of equipment and the style of diets that must be used are kind of restrict us to growing animals and a mixed diet with some concentrate in it in general.
Okay.
And so we have been stubborn here in my program at OSU to study forage intake. We've developed a system where we can do that. And so, yeah, I think we're some of the things we're learning are really exciting, and maybe we're making some progress.
Wow, that's very interesting. And before we go any further, I like to always tell to our audience that if they have any questions, to please comment, and we will be we'll do the task to take our questions to Dr. Lahman. Anybody has anything through this episode. Continuing with that, you know, for me, that's something, you know, very interesting on the forage. But, you know, you work in Oklahoma, you came here to Kansas, you're really from Oklahoma, you did your studies too, your PhD in Missouri. How that on the forage and the overall production differ? Is there too much difference between each state? I'm pretty sure that in Montana it is, but compare here in the, well, I will call the Great Plains, and I know that Missouri might be a little bit off on that, but what is your take on that? I mean, what do you see the difference? What are similarities for a producer?
In any of this type of research, I think there is a good possibility and some evidence that there is a what we call a environment by genetic interaction.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so that's just a fancy way to suggest that some animals in Montana may not rank the same if you were to move those animals to Missouri, for example. They may not rank the same in whatever trait it is you want to measure. And so, yes, there is some chance of that. But, you know, the things that got me really interested in this genetic by nutrition environment is that essentially we have been selecting for growth and carcass weight in the beef cattle industry now for almost 75 years.
Wow.
You know, in fact, if you look at cow size, just since, let's say if a producer had been, Carlos, had a career of 30 years in the cow-calf industry and, you know, managed genetic selection to affect cow size over time. And all that producer did was selected for either breed or industry average mature cow weight, yearling weight growth, what would have happened in that 30-year career, that producer's cows would have increased in mature weight by about 220 pounds.
Wow. That's quite a lot.
Substantially larger cows. And so, yes, that definitely has an impact because, you know, let's say in central Oklahoma on an 80 grass operation of, we'll just pick a ranch, we'll say a 10,000 acre ranch, native range land, say 30% harvest efficiency, that increase in cow size would require a reduction in cow inventory of about 13%. Wow. So if that producer could run 1,000 cows, now that operation would need to run around 130 fewer cows.
Wow.
So you can see how, you know, these genetic changes over time have a substantial impact, you know, on outputs and inputs in a ranching operation.
And to be honest, from my perspective, I never thought about it, you know, that, yeah, you have your set size of ranch and farm, but you know, with genetics, you have to reduce your herd or buy feed and inputs from outside. And that's where it comes to balance. And probably, you know, not from that perspective.
That's a good way to look at it as well. You know, the Kansas Farm Management Association does a great job tracking costs in cow-calf operations in Kansas. Looked at their data a couple weeks ago, and last year, their average cost per cow was about
$1,400. $1,400, okay.
Right at 50% of that is pasture and feed costs. So to sort of emphasize your point, you know, it was costing almost $700 per cow per year to provide nutrients on a ranch.
It will be interesting also to see how that trend has gone. Of course, there's inflation, there's other factors, but some parts of Kansas that I'm pretty sure you're aware for the last 3 years, and this year has been a little bit different, but going through a drought, and of course the growth of the forage has been tough in some parts of it. Yeah. Like same as the crops here, we see it on wheat and corn and soybeans, and of course sorghum. They mean that it's more resistant, you still see some lower yields, and that has also a big impact. So with genetics, I'm pretty sure you guys look at all those inputs on how to at least maintain with the balance of the concentrate and other things. So
yeah,
very interesting topic, and of course for our audience, please, if you like this episode, thumbs up for us. Please put a like on our episode, and we really appreciate everybody connecting today. Continue our conversation, David. One thing that kind of like around circling back into it as we talk about genetics and we talk a little bit about drought and production and reducing herds. You know, one of the things overall that you're starting to see in all industries, and of course, ag is one of those, is the topic of sustainability. And in order to be sustainable, can mean many things, you know, economic, environment, and other things. But the market is asking for it. And being said that, the consumer. So can do you have anything that you want to share a little bit of the work that you guys have done in terms of what you contribute to that sustainability movement in terms of overall from your genetics and nutrition side for both dairy and beef cattle?
Yeah, so I think most people know that beef cattle emit, you know, some greenhouse gases, and those would be carbon dioxide and methane. And there's concern about cattle emitting methane in particular because it's a more potent greenhouse gas compared to carbon dioxide. The big picture is that the beef cattle industry contributes a small amount to agricultural's footprint. And maybe the other important thing to mention about that from a very broad view, Carlos, is that, you know, methane has a cycle of about, I don't know, you hear different numbers, but 10 to 12 years, maybe in the atmospheres before it's broken down and you start over. It's interesting. We could talk about this for a long time. It's interesting. Yeah. I've seen several quotes in the information in the literature that indicates that we have about the same number of ruminant animals, at least in North America today, as we did 200 years ago. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So maybe about the same amount of methane in that 12-year cycle just keeps, that would suggest that, you know, maybe the contribution of livestock has not changed or changed,
yes,
changed very little. So there's my story about the minimal impact of beef cattle industry in particular on North America's carbon footprint. But at the same time, the cow-calf segment of the beef cattle industry does account for 80 to 82% of the methane emissions in the beef cattle industry. Why? Well, because they're grazing forages nearly year-round. Well, most of the year-round, either that or consuming hay. The cow-calf segment, the cows, are consuming hay. And those forages, generally, because of the fermentation process of those carbohydrates, results in some methane production. Yeah, anything we can do, and one of the things we are working on is try to select animals that are more efficient in utilizing forage.
Okay.
You know, we talked about the never-ending selection for growth, and that's potential impact on feed intake in the beef cattle industry. The genetic trend and the breed associations for their feed intake EPDs is increasing right along with growth, and you would expect that. There's a strong genetic correlation between growth and feed intake. But if we can find animals that, you know, have adequate growth, carcass quality, and so on, but consume a moderate amount of feed, well, they'll be efficient and emit fewer emissions at the same time. Very strong reports in the literature that suggest that, you know, methane emissions is very closely tied to feed intake.
For feed intake, okay.
We can find animals that consume moderate amount of feed and are still very productive, we can make some progress on that carbon footprint.
Any particular breeds or that are like using your area for that purpose or still working on that, or what will you recommend like a producer in that case?
So we are right now, our research program is centered around the Angus breed. You know, it's by far the largest breed here in the United States, and also has a very nice genetic database. And so they have as much information as any other breed probably in the world here, right here in the U.S. And so that's where we started our research program. Every contemporary group we test, Carlos, we find cows that might weigh the same and look very similar, but one cow eats 20 pounds of hay a day and the other cow eats 40 pounds of hay a day. You really can't tell by looking, but there's dramatic differences within a contemporary group in a cow's feed intake. Now, if you consider, and I've got an example, I should have brought it with me here today, but we've got one example of one contemporary group where one cow is eating a little over 40 pounds a day. Another's eating about 20 pounds a day. They both weaned calves that weigh about 600 pounds. Okay. The cow eating 20 pounds maintains her body condition. She stays in decent flesh. The cow that's eating 40 pounds is still a little bit thin, believe it or not.
Yeah, believe it or not, that's true.
I mean, if you think about the possibilities there, if you had a ranch that could support 1,000 of the 40-pound cows, the same ranch would support 2,000 of the 20-pound cows. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
And which one of those would you expect to have the least impact on the environment? I mean, obviously that's an extreme example, but there is that kind of potential out there.
Wow. And I think that's important. I mean, we all know this, and in the media you hear all these comments about how sustainable the contribution of methane and greenhouses gases by the livestock industry but we also have to consider that there's ways to mitigate, like you just mentioned. And of course, you know, there's also, of course, the big thing that we're feeding the world, and there are just a lot of people that do need their protein. So it's a balance that we always have to maintain, at least from my perspective. For our audience, please, if you have any new idea for a topic, or like to suggest something, please leave it on the comment section of this podcast. We really appreciate it. So, David, thank you very much for that comment. I think that actually kind of like leads me for the next part. I mean, sustainability is a big topic that we always talk about in any ag industry. And the other one, probably even newer from that perspective, but is the concept of artificial intelligence. Where is that going? How is that going to fit in their ag world? Well, it's already there anyway.
Yeah.
In your area of expertise, what do you think is the future with AI? I mean, something that you guys see. I know there's a lot, but I'm pretty sure the audience might be interested in see what is the top things that you guys are seeing or looking or working.
Yeah, I mean, the potential is just mind-boggling on tools that could be developed and are being developed to enhance agriculture and agricultural efficiency. It's very exciting, for sure. So, Carlos, one example, one thing, you know, we talked about earlier, the holy grail in beef nutrition research, especially if you're a cow guy like me, is forage intake of a cow out on pasture. I think we'll get there. I think we'll get there with the use of artificial intelligence. You'll be able to take a wide range of data on very different phenotypes, if you will, of an animal, and put all those pieces of data together and be able to determine with a good degree of accuracy, I think, you know, of their forage intake on pasture without disrupting their normal behavior. For example, I'll just give you a few examples of the type of tools we might be able to use to do that. You know, camera technology, just to get a picture of the animals every day, maybe as they're walking to water or something. You can get an evaluation of how full they are, their body condition, perhaps a respiration rate, things like that. Now we have walk across scales. We have front end scales where cattle can be drinking water with their front feet up on a scale. And that's a very good predictor of the animal's body weight and how it changes every day, multiple times a day, in fact.
Wow.
Where now, you know, we have to get cattle historically, traditionally, we have to get cattle into a pen, run them through an alley, put them on a scale, weigh them, and then eventually they get turned back out. Well, that's a pretty radical disruption in their day's events, right? But I think we'll be able to do those kind of things, and with onboard monitors like heart rate monitors, respiration monitors, things like that, we'll be able to eventually get to the point where we can actually determine feed intake. That's just one example. Another example, you mentioned a grant we received here not too long ago to look at those same kind of tools in feedlot cattle. There's some concern or discussion about late feed yard death in the cattle industry. What we're going to do is to apply a group of technologies, like I just mentioned, to see if we can learn something about those animals' behavior. Well, you would think if an animal experiences congestive heart failure, i.e. a major contributor to late feed yard death, congestive heart failure, that over time their behavior would be changing. If their heart is giving, it is a result of stress, maybe they're eating less frequently, maybe they're letting down more throughout the day, maybe during heat stress they're panting harder because, you know, they don't have the blood flow to their extremities to dissipate heat, on and on. And so, you know, I think we'll have some tools eventually where we can predict which animals might be, you know, might be susceptible to that kind of stress. And we can use those predictors then maybe to select against animals that are more susceptible.
Wow. Yeah. That's, I have done my weighting of cattle helping friends and in the family farm. I know how that goes. So any of those tools, I'm pretty sure a lot of us will benefit. We'll be glad to accept them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No, but very important. And for our audience, if you learn something new today, please share the video on that. So David, thank you very much for all this information. I think this is very helpful for a lot of people that are worldwide in the beef cattle and dairy industry.
It's time for our famous three.
Evonik Animal Nutrition is committed to ensure food security and safety while reducing the ecological footprint of animal farming. Its products and services use evidence-based solutions that seek to promote animal welfare and reduce reliance on natural resources. All this is underpinned by long-standing industry partnerships and deep customer understanding. Evonik's focus on efficiency, sustainable, healthy nutrition, and collaborations with livestock farming partners creates value for customers and consumers.
To wrap up, one of the things that we always like to do here in Wisenetics on our podcast is to ask our person that join us, what is their favorite book related to the work that you do, let's say on feed efficiency on forages, and just tell us a little bit about why that book. You would recommend somebody that wants to learn a bit more about it without taking a class per se, but some book that could serve a good guidance or bulletin or website too.
Well, I'll mention two. One, Carlos, right here on my desk is the big green Bible, Beef Cattle Nutrition, okay? This is published by the National Academy of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine.
Okay.
It is a collection of the ideas on beef cattle nutrition and the standards used in the industry from a committee of some of the best known, respected, and many would be considered legends in the academic world relative to beef cattle nutrition. That's why my students, before they graduate with a master's degree or PhD, they're going to know this book pretty well.
They have to have it.
And obviously, I need to know it very, very well too. Now, we have discovered some differences, things that we have learned that are maybe we think we could improve on in this book, but that's how we make progress.
Exactly. That's so science.
That's okay. That's science. That's what we're here for, is to make progress. So that would be one book that's really important in my world and important to my students, and it's a very good foundation. You know, secondly, I really enjoy the history of our business, the history of agriculture in the U.S. and other parts of the world. I really enjoy the history of beef cow production. I read a book here, gosh, it's maybe been two winters ago over Christmas break, called The Bell Ranch.
Okay.
Bell Ranch in New Mexico. It was a Spanish land grant. Oh. And it originally, as I recall, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but as I recall, the number of acres on the Bell Ranch was in the hundreds of thousands of acres. Okay.
I can believe that. Yeah. That seems pretty accurate. And that was those times, colonial. Yeah.
They were big. And their gradual improvement over the decades is just fascinating. You know, to them, technology was crossbreeding. Technology was a windmill, and technology was the development of a tank or a pond so that they could utilize 60 or 70,000 acres to graze that they couldn't use before because they didn't have water.
Yeah.
I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, that's a book that I will look into it too.
Yeah,
I'm very curious about it.
Very cool.
Good. Well, thank you for that. And then also just pretty much just to wrap up, in your opinion, what sets a successful, you know, beef cattle grower, researcher, any professional in the industry, apart from those who are not? What would you recommend somebody making their career into it?
Well, if we're talking about, especially about young people, you know, that are kind of nerdy like I am relative to, you know, beef cattle nutrition, improving in that area, genetics and those kind of things. Well, any graduate student, really, if you're, well, student, undergraduate or graduate student, as far as that goes now that I think about it. But, you know, one thing you need to have is a passion for quality data.
Okay.
Very good. And now that sounds easy, but if you think about all that goes into that, it's a very important trait to have. The other thing I think of in young people, and when I like to visit with them before we talk about maybe making an offer for them to come into our graduate program, is how are your writing skills? Not horseback riding, writing as in academic writing. And I don't expect for a student to have fantastic writing skills, but I do expect for them to, let's say, not dislike writing. Okay. Writing is a big part, as you will know, a big part of graduate school. Now, it can be a really exciting part if you conduct your own research, you're interested in it, and it's really cool to get to do the analysis and then write about it and get it published so the rest of the world can benefit from it forevermore. And that is our goal in graduate school. So, you know, if that kind of thing excites you and quality data excites you and making progress in some of these areas of agriculture, a graduate degree might be a good thing to include in your future.
Great. No, perfect. No, that's great advice. And I'm pretty sure that everybody in the audience and including myself appreciates. So with that, Dave, thank you very much. We really appreciate you taking your busy time to join us on the Feed Science podcast. So with that, this concludes another episode of the Feed Science podcast presented by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on any of future episodes. And of course, to our audience, if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very important for us. Until next time, this is Carlos Campabadal from the Feed Science Podcast signing off.
feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.